Hey everyone, it's October 28th, 2018, and it's your episode 166 of At Percussion. I'm your host, Casey Cangelosi, and it's just Ben Charles and I. Ben, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Have we ever done just one, you and I?
I don't think so. I think I've done just Megan and me, but I don't think it's been just you and me. But I'm a little concerned about you. I don't know why you're podcasting when you've got a thing next year in Stephenville to prepare for.
Are you already plugging your day of percussion?
I'm already plugging my day of percussion that Casey's going to be a guest artist for.
I think it's. I it sounds like it's really strict. Sounds like your guest artists have to play note perfect.
Yeah.
Except
So,
nothing else. Yeah. Are you...
Casey and I think are going to play Nagoya Marimbas, which will be fun.
That'll be fun. Like we almost did that one time. Yeah, Nagoya
Yeah.
Marimbas, if you don't know, it's one of those pieces. It's probably the closest thing to a marimba duo classic we have. Of course, we don't really have any classics, but this would be close. And you always bump into somebody. Oh, which part do you play? Okay, let's play it.
It's also a piece that really doesn't require almost any rehearsal. If both people can play their part, you just go and it works. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Well, you guys, we have a really cool guest today, and it's good timing for this episode because he is just celebrating his victory. Huge congratulations on this Concert Artists Guild International Competition winner. He's the second percussionist in history, right, Ben, to win this?
Second after our dear teacher Svet 15 years ago.
Ah, Svet, 15 years ago. So, yeah, you guys, this is Dmitry, also known as Mitya Nilov. How's it going?
Everything's wonderful, guys. Thank you for having me. I actually have to share something that I would say that I'm the fourth percussionist in the world because Ayana has also won that competition, and I think it was Nanoka who won it first just playing marimba. But we definitely can check our facts on their website.
Well, I saw
But
Manny Mamura has a marimba credit there, and I saw the other. I just searched around looking for percussion. I saw them in ensembles, but yeah, you're probably right. There are other victors there that maybe aren't listed, I guess.
it's definitely no, it's been only four of us, and it's definitely been 15 years since they have signed a percussionist. It is really exciting. Last year I was fortunate to actually attend the finals where Jisoo Jung advanced to, and unfortunately she did not have they did not sign her that year, but she definitely played her heart out, and I witnessed that. Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing about this competition that's so crazy to me is most competitions we think of, Trump competition or the Luxembourg Marimba competition, are percussionists pitted against percussionists, and I think we always feel we have a fair chance in those. But oftentimes, even at just university concerto competitions, it's hard for a percussionist to stand up to a pianist or a violinist. And I could be wrong, but I think when Svet won, Svet actually won it. Again, I could be wrong, but I think he won it playing the Bach D minor chaconne on marimba, which for a marimba player to play that up next to a violinist is ballsy. So, Dimitri, how did you feel about competing against non-percussionists in this competition?
This is actually something I was looking forward to. I think if I had you guys and the juries in front of me during the finals, I'd be a little bit more worried.
Right.
But
Yeah.
I grew up in St. Petersburg. I grew up next to people who won classical music competitions playing violin at the age of 10. St. Petersburg is so, people call it the cultural capital of Russia. And I would agree. My school was right next to the Mariinsky Theater, and the school is actually that I went to at the age of 7, and I spent 11 years at. It's called the Special Music School of the St. Petersburg Conservatory. So for 11 years, I'd be taking mathematics and music theory and private lessons day by day, with my teachers. And the days were really long. I had to, write music dictations at the age of 9 or 8. I don't even remember. And so a lot of ear training, and definitely, being a percussionist surrounded by all this true wonder childs, wonder childs, I guess. How do you call it in English, I wonder? Wunderkind. So I guess it comes with some sort of responsibility. Like, for instance, the repertoire that I started from was violin concerti on xylophone. Like, I can still play the last movement of Shostakovich's violin concerto on xylophone. I can play Saint-Saëns's Ronda Capricciosa. And, I actually had a funny story about it. Maybe we'll have time and I'll share. Just remind me, guys. Once I came for a concert in Berlin, and instead of a marimba, they rented a vibraphone, and I found out about it 3 hours before the concert. I had to pull off Ronda Capricciosa on the vibraphone instead of, Rosario Marimba Concerto, stuff like that. So,
I
didn't have a choice. Yeah. And I can still play it, but I guess I practiced it a lot. But coming back to your question, I feel inspired. I think that playing with such wonderful musicians surrounding you gives you much more inspiration in terms of the artistry. I would expect that. I have never done solo marimba competitions. I've done percussion competitions. I've won percussion competitions, but it was all actually before I came to the States. But I'd expect someone playing for, let's say, Trump percussion competition, which is coming up, right, to have much more responsibility in terms of the art of playing percussion as an instrumentalist rather than the responsibility in terms of being an artist and being a musician. I guess that it's really debatable and subjective, and maybe I'm using it's a poor choice of words, because at the end of the day, we want everybody to play music and not think about how they double sound on the snare drum. But, I'd say that it's actually something what have helped me to play my best in simple terms. It's something what I enjoy. I knew that I had to go and play a concert instead of thinking that I was competing against, other musicians.
Sure.
I've listened to many finalists live that day, and then I actually came back and listened to the recordings of what people have done, and it is impressive. I mean, we have one of the finalists was this wonderful guitar player from Australia who just recently won ARD competition. I wish I didn't know that before I had to play against a person like that. Yeah, but at the same time, you cannot think in terms of I want to beat you. No, when I was in the audience, I was rooting for everyone to play their best.
Yeah.
And the competition wasn't about who's the best instrumentalist on stage. To me, it felt like they were looking for, well, first of all, as a management company, they're definitely looking for a product that they can sell. But at the same time, it was much more about the artistry and about your appeal as a musician.
Maybe a celebration of look at all these good players we have and look at where music is at today.
Yeah,
I mean, looking at the Trump competition, I feel it's the same way there. It's not this cutthroat, people hate each other sort of thing. I mean, it seems like a celebration of music. And I think that we would be remiss if we did not mention Dimitri's collaborative partner. I'll allow Dimitri to talk a little bit about Asia.
Yes. So Asia is actually my relative. Whenever we try to explain to people in what way we are relatives, it sounds like we made it up and we just have some sort of a secret romance, even though she's happily married in Boston. So Asia is the sister of my god sister's husband. It definitely sounds made up, I understand. But at the same time, we somehow accidentally appeared to be going to the same school in Miami, to University of Miami. She received a doctorate degree, just like Ben from Frost School of Music, and also her artist diploma certificate, studying with Santiago Rodriguez. So we've been close friends, but funny enough, we've never had a chance to perform together. And she jumped on board pretty late in the game. And definitely she really has helped me. In some ways, I've already said this out loud in at a different interview after the CAG finals, that when I was applying and thinking about what repertoire to play, I wanted to cheat in some way and let's say show off my skills as a chamber music player, something what I'm really interested in and something what I want to be the ultimate goal of, I guess, my career. I love playing with other instrumentalists. I enjoy the kind of collaborative spirit and the spontaneous things that happen on stage when we do this. So most of the program that I've played throughout the rounds, except for the very first one, was with a pianist, with her. And yeah, she definitely helped me a lot. And we had a wonderful night of celebration, and she had to go because she's truly busy.
I was just going to say, if I could just interject and add, so people know the caliber of musician that we're talking about here. This girl, I mean, she plays solo piano recitals 3 hours in length from memory, and not easy stuff. I saw her do one recital where she did, I think, all 24 Liszt Transcendental Etudes or something like that. I mean, and she was in the Tchaikovsky competition, and I watched her play her, again, 3 hours of solo repertoire from memory and recital, and was just, I mean, spellbinding. I remember that concert was actually so long. There was an old man in the audience that got angry and upset that the concert was too long because he had to go to the bathroom in the middle of it. But I mean, this is a serious, serious musician in her own right. And then, you know, to pair it with Dimitri, I can easily see why things went well.
Yes, I'm a great tutor. Once I've done it before, I had to record a videotape as the first round of one of the auditions, and I wanted to play a movement from History of Tango by Piazzolla. So I asked a friend of mine who happened to own a Guarneri that's worth $5 million to record with me for that tape. So yeah, I guess I'm good at choosing collaborative musicians. So everybody loved her, and definitely we had to be a part of this awkward conversation when people stop by and say, oh, have you guys been playing for a long time together? We're like, no, actually, we've rehearsed for 3 weeks, but she's wonderful, and I'm really grateful to her. Thankfully, I had a moment to thank her on stage during the competition winners concert, which wasn't live streamed, so you guys can't see how badly I played for that.
Speaking of what you played, and you mentioned choosing your repertoire, I know that's always such a big thing for competition takers. They just wonder, and of course, a lot of times the stipulations, the rules, they will describe to you exactly what to play so you don't have to think about it. But can you just give some of our young listeners some advice on what variables they should think about when choosing their repertoire for a competition?
Absolutely. So I would, instead of maybe formulating a particular advice, or if I have to make a particular advice, I would say that we just have to find something what we're not just good at, but something what speaks the most, and something what projects our voice as a musician the best. So sometimes we have desires to play pieces that we appreciate, or maybe we have a strong connection to as a listener, and we end up learning them, and we still perform them with realization that maybe this is not the best version of that piece. So we like the piece more than the way we play. I'll give you an example. Like, for instance, I would love to play I Ching, you know, but I don't think if I can. it's an example of, there are some pieces that we have so much appreciation for, and we understand with our minds that it would probably be really impressive, but it wouldn't represent us as musicians. So for that particular competition, I just had to show myself, and I just had to let my voice as a musician speak, and at the same time think about the diversity. Because the moment we read the requirements for the competition, we can't help but notice that the word diversity comes out on every single paragraph. So, for instance, the very first round of the competition was an audio recording. It was anonymous, so I had to send from 30 to 40 minutes of music without my name on it. I have recorded a variety of pieces. I only played one multi-piece. It wasn't really, I guess, dry recording of Ribbons B by Xenakis. You have to understand, though, for each particular competition, we have to think about the people on the juries. So CEG competition has different people on the juries for every round. The first round, the recordings I'm talking about, are being sent to two separate percussionists who are not allowed to discuss them, and they grade them and I guess just say yes or no. Mm-hmm. So the first round, I was sending to two professional percussionists. I can only think about the level of those artists. You know, I do not know the names, but for instance, for my semifinals, Chris Lamp was on the juries. Just for that particular, 12 minutes long round. So when I was sending it there, I knew that I just have to show that I'm capable of playing what we might call the standard rep. Okay, so I recorded Convariations. I recorded Xenakis' Ribbons B. I recorded the third movement from Polanski's Three Moves. So the slide. I recorded some Bach on marimba. It was from the C major cello suite. I also sent jazz vibraphone and piano duo called Piazza Nore that we just recorded for Vic Firth actually. And that piece was written by Alexei Gerasimets, also a really, I'd say, famous European percussionist who plays a lot. He was one of the finalists for ARD, along with Simone Rubina and Christoph. And he's just wonderful.
You won Trump, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, he did. Oh, forgot to mention. But definitely, definitely a good percussionist and a good musician with big love for the jazz. And the piece, for those of you who don't know it, is just highly influenced by the textures created by Chick Corea and Gary Burton. It's in some ways, as I said during my finals, that it's a celebration of music by Astor Piazzolla. But basically, those are variations on Libertanga for vibraphone and piano, and the textures are really detailed and really playful, just like Chick and Gary. So that was my tape, and you know, thankfully I made it through. I truly believe that's the hardest round in the whole competition. People don't see you; they only hear you. I would say, I don't know how appropriate this is, but in my experience, whenever it's just an audio tape, people do edit. So when you decide whether or not you want to edit your tape for an anonymous audio audition, just think about 20 more people who already made the decision and they did edit it. I'm not talking about the sound, the you know, quality of the sound in particular, but maybe some cuts or anything. I was lucky enough to have many tapes that were just, you know, one take because I had enough time. But in general, that's also an issue that you have to face, you know, when you send in the tapes.
Sure.
If it's an audio tape.
Is there any stipulation in the rules saying you may not edit?
Well, I think that the way that they, I don't remember for this particular competition, but if I recall correctly, the normal phrasing is unedited audio tapes.
Yeah, okay.
But then it's definitely a subjective matter of what are we talking about? Are we talking about cuts or the sound? Does it have to be live sound without... it's actually something what we have to think about and make some serious decisions when we send this tape. So, coming back to the answer of how do you choose your rep. So the first round, I just knew that I'm sending this to two percussionists. So that's why I played Xenakis, that's why I played Khan. Also, I have a personal connection with playing Khan. Ben is the first person I've ever seen playing Khan. Before knowing, well, after Svet, but I heard Svet live and then I went on YouTube and there was this video of a really nerdy guy who like explains how the texture works. And then 5 years later, I realized it's Ben. After knowing Ben for 5 years, I was like, wait a second, it's Ben.
I remember that conversation now, actually.
But Khan variations is definitely something what strongly speaks to my heart, to my ears. So it wasn't just like a crowd pleaser or like percussionist professor's pleaser. It still was a part of me. Just I understood that, for instance, I could not spend 9.5 minutes of my 17 or 20 minutes long finals program on playing Khan variations. So for my semifinals, it was something really interesting. We only had 12 minutes to play, and you send them a 60 to 70 minutes long list of the repertoire that you want to play, and they choose what they want to hear. So for the percussionists this year, we were a little bit luckier because they said that, well, we understand that if you say that you're going to play three different multi-percussion pieces, it wouldn't be productive to set up all three of them and then hear one of them for 30 seconds. So they actually let us, I don't know how all the other competitors will feel right now, but they actually let us choose what we wanted to play. And then actually Chris Lab asked me to play something else. For the semifinals and the finals, the program was approximately the same for me. I have played portions of Citroen and Marimba Concerto. I have played this vibraphone and piano jazz duo, and I also played an excerpt from To the Gods of Rhythm by Niboshi Jovan Jivkovic. In my semifinals, I also got to play more Bach. And then the finals, well, you have probably seen. It was exactly those three pieces. I made that decision to repeat some of the repertoire in the finals round because, again, the jurors were completely new. So all the people from the committee did not hear me during the semifinals, so I did not have to be afraid of repeating the music that I wanted to play live. And probably Ben understands this kind of sweet and warm music is something that really represents me as a musician. Yeah, and now I remember. yeah, and also, again, speaking of the answering your questions, I chose to play To the Gods of Rhythm for two simple reasons. I'm a drummer, I'm supposed to play drums.
Yeah.
It's really strange. If I didn't, in terms of the setup, playing one djembe with vocalizations is much easier than bringing a Safa setup on stage. And also, in some ways in that program, it worked as an encore. You know, I played the concerti and then I played a really virtuosic and appealing vibraphone piano duo. And then I had a closer, you know, that was one minute and 15 seconds long. Thankfully, we were also allowed to play some portions of the piece. So for those of you who heard me or will hear me play Séjourner, you will notice that there are many, many cuts. We're not playing the first movement at all. We're playing the second and third movements, and there are many cuts that we made ourselves. which actually makes sense, I think. It's definitely something hard to do, but we had to do this. Too many finalists, 12 people in one day.
I think that to sort of like wrap up the original question of like, how did you feel about playing against, you know, cellists and pianists, and violinists? Like, I think it's such a testament to, we've talked many times on the podcast about the famous 20th century composition teacher, Nadia Boulanger, and her whole thing was sort of good music is good music, regardless of genre or instrumental medium or anything like that. And I think it's a testament to the fact that percussionists have now matured to the level of violinists and pianists that we can compete on the same level. And it's really, you know, it's almost not shocking anymore to see that a percussionist did win these competitions. And I think visually percussionists are, you know, just by default more interesting in a sense. So if you have the musical chops to stand up to it and you have the visual flair of a percussionist, I don't see why one shouldn't win.
I agree, but I agree with what you're saying. I've mentioned again a few days ago in another interview that in general, I think that the setting of a percussion concerto with an orchestra nowadays is probably one of the best mediums that classical venues can offer to their audiences. If we think about, let's say, Avner Dorman's concerti, if we talk about Spices, Perfumes, Toxins, which is a double percussion concerto, or about Frozen in Time, which is a solo percussionist concerto, the overall structure is just so diverse. In this 3D era, when everybody is used to, you know, getting any information they want, a piece that first sounds really groovy and sexy. Are we allowed to use this word, by the way? Yeah. Well,
you can't, please do.
Say,
yes.
I'm you not, can't say groovy.
Okay. Okay. So, moving and sexy. First movement on marimba and some Middle Eastern drums, and then we dive into the world of let's say, you know, Perfumes or some magic, playing vibraphones, crotales, bells, triangles, cymbals, and all the metal instruments that just create this blurry effect, and you dive so deeply into the music, and then finish it up with playing a huge setup with 10 cymbals and 15 drums. This is probably something what an audience member would enjoy very much in comparison to, let's say, listening to the second Tchaikovsky piano concerto. And Isa will kill me for saying this, but, you know. Sure.
It's such a great state to be in after, you know, I don't know, when did we have Bill Mersch on, Ben? A few months ago? And
yeah.
Him talking about those early, early competitions and, you know, just putting, you know, the requirements of percussion needed by the soloist or whoever the winner was, and the logistics people or the organizers saying like, oh no, wait a minute, there must be some mistake. This is for musicians.
Oh. Or my favorite, the quote about John Haas, I'm sorry, we only have musical instruments in this competition.
Yeah, maybe that's the one I'm thinking of. That might be the one I'm thinking of. But I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, John Haas and Bill Mersch are, they are alive and well. Like, it's not that long ago, you know?
Yeah, they fought that battle, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they really fought that battle. And it's, it's amazing. I think younger people don't even notice. Don't even, you know, so it's cool.
Well, I'm sure you guys are aware, I just want to mention this, that 2 days ago at Carnegie Hall, Yuji Wang played with Martin Grubinger and his group, right?
Right.
So this happens more often and more often. There were 280 tapes that were sent to CAG this year for the first round, and then there were 75 semifinalists with 27 pianists. And then it came up to 12 finalists, where it was percussionist, an accordion player from Portugal, a guitar player from Australia, two ensembles, and seven more, you know, violin, piano, piano, violin, violin, piano. And so they still kind of, you know, made a decision to sign a percussionist. And I'm not talking about, you know, my achievement, I'm just talking about that it's so wonderful that it starts to be possible.
Well, to move things in a completely different direction, we had a Facebook question from Svet Stoyanov, teacher in Miami. And okay. I'm going to answer this question before Dimitri's allowed to answer this question. Svet said, please share some thoughts about deciding and following your decision to study abroad. What were the important moments in the process? What was hard and what was easier? And before Dimitri's allowed to talk about this, I want to tell two funny anecdotes, maybe three. I remember I was in a rehearsal with Svet, and Svet got an email, and Svet was so excited. He said, yes, this kid from Russia, finally, he's going to come here and study next year. We finally got, he passed the TOEFL, which is the test of English as a foreign language. He passed the TOEFL with the minimum score possible to get into the University of Miami.
No. I was one point above.
Svet was so excited. And so Dimitri came to the U.S., and I mean, he spoke English, but not well at all. And I just remember he had this beautiful, thick Russian accent at first. And we would ask him to say things because it just sounded so amazing in his voice. And one day I go, Dimitri, can you say Mr. Bond prepared to die? And he goes, Mr. Bond, prepare for to die.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most amazing moments in my entire life.
I have actually used this quote many, many times since then. Whenever people need to speak Russian, I'm like, well, prepare for to die, Mr. Bond. Yeah, well, could you repeat the formulation that Svet used on his question?
Yeah, sure. So some thoughts about deciding and following your decision to study abroad. What were the important moments? What was hard and what was easier?
Okay, so definitely I would like to give a few credits here. So I went for a festival in Poland in 2009 in July for a month. And it was a percussion festival, percussion like summer camp, I would call it. But we had everything. We had David Friedman playing with a saxophone player. We had a marching guy from the States. We had Linda Maxey. We had so many wonderful Polish musicians teaching us. And it was the first time when I met people who, you know, go to party and then practice at 8 in the morning. The first particular person was Tomasz Arnold, who once went out, and I guess I showed up like at noon at the you know, practice rooms, and he said that he's been there already for 4 hours. I don't know if he lied, but I believed him. So it was the very first time I was introduced to the International Percussion Society, I'd say. And it was a place where I met Maria Klebus, our friend who we went to school with, both me and Ben. And actually, my first chamber music group was Paul Lansky's Threats with Ben, John Weisner, and Maria Klebus in the States. And Maria, we became friends, and Maria emailed me, look, Katarzyna Miczka has this Marimba Academy in Frankfurt. All the act, like the deadline has passed, of course, but let me try and talk to her. So because of Maria, Katarzyna let me come as an active participant. And at the same time, Bob, Professor Robert Van Sijs, had to substitute himself with Svet for that academy. So actually, the four teachers for that Frankfurt Katarzyna Miczka International Marimba Academy were Katarzyna Miczka, Rainer Römer from Germany, Erik Samu, and Svet Stoyanov. And this was definitely a life-changing experience. I actually feel horrible because Kashka's birthday was yesterday, and I still have not messaged her. I will, because I really want to make sure that I thank her. So the academy is just wonderful. It's a place with 40 marimbas in one building. We played a lot of chamber music. We had, throughout the academy, we had three lessons with everyone, and every night we had some sort of concert. This could be a chamber music concert. This could be one of the faculty members' recital. We ourselves played a few chamber music concerts. We went for an ensemble modern rehearsal with Steve Reich, rehearsing music for 18. So I have never seen anything like that. And at the same time, I have never met anyone like that. And we clicked from the first lesson that we had in 2009, and I knew that I really wanted to study with him. It didn't matter to me where he teached. But then he mentioned that he teaches in Miami, and for a guy from Russia, it sounded like, oh, I think my life is really changing. So then, unfortunately, it took some time for me to finish the school and get my stuff together, to pass TOEFL and everything. So I finally made it to Miami in 2012. It is definitely challenging for anyone coming from other countries. First of all, it's impossible to understand that you have to apply to send your application before December 1st. I mean, this never happens. In Russia, when you finish school in May or in June, actually, you apply for a conservatory somewhere in June, and then you audition somewhere in July, and then you start studying on September 1st. That's how it happens. So it was a definitely long process. I needed to pass TOEFL, which is approximately, I guess, 4 hours long test of English as a foreign language. That's true. I actually managed to pass it with a score of 81, and the University of Miami had the minimum of 80. First time I took it was somewhere in January. I think the deadline was somewhere in February. So I took the TOEFL somewhere in January. I got 65. And then I applied to another test straight away without studying, and I knew that was my, you know, only shot. And yeah, I was lucky enough to get 81. But then I kind of said to myself, you know, prepare for to die, Mr. TOEFL. And then before Yale, I had to pass it again, and I got 107 points out of 120. So I felt like the king of the world. It was definitely much easier after getting a bachelor's degree from an American institution. Yes, many things are challenging. Miami is a great transitional place because it's a melting pot. I don't think that I've learned anything in particular about the American culture in Miami, because everybody speaks Spanish, and there are people who only speak Spanish. And I've always been into Latin jazz and into salsa, so it felt like home. It's definitely too humid, but the tandem of Matt Strauss and Svet Stoyanov, I think it's one of the best things, if not the best one, in the world, where a young percussionist could you know, get their first experience with music. So challenging, but exciting, definitely. I grew up in theater. My whole family is somehow related to the arts, so everybody understood from my early age that at some point I will travel and study somewhere else. Nobody thought it'd be Miami. Definitely nobody could have thought about me getting an Ivy League diploma for my master's, but I really like, I saw that you guys are having Professor Banzais on your podcast, and I love Doug Perry's question about who's your favorite student and why is it me? So,
Doug specifically asked that we don't ask that, but now we've asked it here, so it's kind of good. That's a good compromise.
Yes. Well, I've been so happy and so fortunate to have studied with Svet and Bob, because those are just such deep musicians. I mean, we all know this. I can almost, I know it sounds funny on the percussion podcast, but I almost feel ashamed to call them just percussionists, you know?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I
know so much mean, yeah. More than that. Yeah, Svet is my probably closest friend in the States, and he's a true mentor in everything, in many awkward things that I had to avoid doing throughout my studies in at UM. He's been always there for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you take in his very fast car around Miami?
I have not driven it. I don't think that Seth would ever let me drive his car. No, actually, no. We had this project with Hartford Symphony, and I was the one driving. So I felt like I finally became an adult, because Seth lets me, you know.
Dimitri, before you got here, I told Casey about the time you drove Taylor's car.
That's a funny story.
I'll just say that Svet and Dimitri, both Eastern Europeans, they drive in a different style as Americans.
Yeah.
There are no laws.
Yeah. Well,
The story goes that I took someone's car, and then I didn't have his cell phone number, so I knew he was in rehearsal with a friend of ours, and I texted her, "Could you ask Taylor, how fast can it go?" All I meant was that, you know, he had an old Ford Explorer, and I know that some people have preferences, like, you know, it's an old car, please don't drive it faster than that, or something like that. And I was really late for a gig. And when I came back, he asked me, "So how fast can it go?" as a joke. And I told him that, unfortunately, it doesn't go faster than 110. I think there's some sort of a block. And I think for the next 10 minutes, he thought I was joking. He was like, "Such a funny joke." It's like, "Well, actually, no, it actually can go faster than 110. Yeah. I still made it to that gig. And I did not get a speeding ticket.
Because you probably would have been deported.
Probably. Yeah, no, I have to say that I've learned from my mistakes, and now I'm being much more careful when I drive
everywhere. Yeah,
I grew up.
I think it depends. I'm sure it varies state to state, but I think if you're going 110, it's worse than a speeding ticket.
you got to go to court after 100 miles per hour.
Honestly, like, Miami is a pretty lawless wasteland. They'll probably let it slide there. I'll give you a high for it.
Gig, they'll say, like, "Oh, yeah, if you had a gig, geez, I understand."
Well, I have to say, you know, in my defense, that in Florida, there are like 5-6 lanes and they all go straight. It was really sunny and you could see everything like many miles ahead of you. Yeah.
Yeah,
I did get a speeding ticket.
No, I actually got a new car over the summer. I got a nice Mazda 3 in red.
Oh, very good. Yeah, big Professor
John. But, well, I had one kind of topic I wanted to hit on a little bit before we wrap up here. And that is, I know in the finals of the CAG competition, Mitya played the Séjourné Marimba Concerto, or at least a cut of it. And then Mitya also has, I think, one of the best percussion recordings, period, on YouTube I've ever seen of Departures, with our friend he mentioned earlier, Maria Klebus. So I want to give a quick little mini bio on Emmanuel Séjourné and hear Dimitri talk about his experiences with those two works a little bit. So Séjourné was born July 16th, 1961 in Limoges, France, and he studied piano, violin, music history, acoustics, and music analysis before he started percussion in 1976. So he had quite an extensive background in musical studies before he actually got to the sort of technical aspect of playing percussion music. He studied with, and I'll probably butcher the French name here, Jean Batinge, who was one of the founders of Les Percussions de Strasbourg, which is one of the big percussion ensembles in France. They played a lot of the Xenakis works were some of their big things. And he became, while studying with this person, interested in contemporary and improvised music. He won the first prize in percussion at the conservatory in 1980, and he began to specialize in mallet percussion. 4 years later, in 1984, he actually became the professor at the Strasbourg Conservatory. He plays 6 mallets. I couldn't find a whole lot of info about it, but there is a little video of him playing 6 mallets if you look on YouTube. And I wanted to just sort of hit a few of my favorite Séjourné works. I think one of the sort of golden areas of his compositional output is he has some really, really good intermediate marimba works. So Nancy, which was composed in 1989 for solo marimba, and Catamia from 1995, which was composed, I believe, either for or in honor of Katarzyna Miszka and Momoko Kamiya, hence the name of, you know, sort of portmanteau of their names, but both really, really good sort of intermediate marimba works with a lot of, I think, music to dig into. He has a piece from 1995 that was commissioned by Rotterdam Percussion called Martian Tribes, and it's for 4 players on 1 marimba 8 hands, and it's sort of like, you know, along the lines of Stubernick or Aftestuba, those sort of multiple people on one instrument, and it's just goofy and super fun. I recall seeing a video of, I think Martian Tribes is actually a movement of a larger work. So I remember seeing a video of, like, I think Séjourné and Samu in these, like, white sort of jumpsuit things on snare drums playing. It's kind of bizarre stuff. And then, of course, Departures from 2005, which, like I said, Mitya just has this amazing, amazing video of with Maria Klebus. So, Mitya, while we have just a couple minutes left here, could you tell us about your experiences with the Séjourné works?
Yes, for sure. Well, I would like also to mention another piece for Sol Marimba called Romantica. I don't know.
Yes, and that was actually also, I left that one off when I was talking, but 2007 and Kashka has a great recording of that on YouTube as well.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful piece. A lot of different, a lot of other works. Well, Emmanuel is definitely a man of many talents. He was a part of the trio with Robert Van Cise called Allures, where they played many contemporary works without any particular influence of jazz music, which we could hear from the works that you've mentioned, and Departures and his vibraphone concerto and his marimba concerto. He's been collaborating with Bogdan Bacano. They actually, I'm not sure they have the rights, like exclusive rights to perform that concerto that's, let me remember how it's called, the Concerto for Four Marimbas that he wrote for the Wave Quartet a few years ago. He's definitely a passionate musician and a performer. He's one of these examples of being a great teacher, being a wonderful composer, and a really appealing performer. I have never had a chance to work with him, actually, in person. I've heard from many, many coachings that he gave that his favorite two comments are louder and faster. But this seems to be really ironical considering how sincere and genuine and right. gentle his music is at in some points. But he's a true lover of our art form, you know, of the music, I'd say. I'm looking forward to for any opportunities to start working with him. In fact, one of the things that I have been fortunate to get an award with CAG is a BMI commissioning prize. So I have something really exciting in front of me. I'm not sure what composer I'll be collaborating with, but we will definitely consider, you know, some of the percussion composers, and Emmanuel will be on that list, or one of the first people on that list. Sure. And I'll know a little bit more about it, but for now I know that next season I am premiering this new work at Carnegie, in my solo recital at Carnegie.
Cool. Wow, that's great. I just agree full-heartedly. Emmanuel is such a sweet guy, and I've been lucky enough to share a concert with him. And, oh man, that was a concert where you look at who you're playing with and you just kind of go, wait, what the hell am I doing on this concert? But it was Michael Burt, Emmanuel Sejourne, Momoko Kamiya, Jean Chauffoir, and I'm just thinking like, oh my gosh, how am I here right now? But yeah, and then we both were on the jury panels at one of the Italy PAS. I think he was on marimba that year. I was on snare drum that year. And yeah, I mean, just such a special guy. I mean, just the so many things he says, just little things in passing at the dinner table or whatever in between sessions that you just really stick with you. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. He's just like a great lover of our craft and really good at our craft. And yeah, just what an asset it is to know the guy. So anyway, hey, well, man, Mitya, just huge congratulations on this competition. And it seems like it's just great to celebrate you this hour. And yeah, thanks for joining us. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, and good luck with your podcast, guys. And Casey, I'm looking forward. I've never played a piece written by you. I really respect you as a composer, and I'm excited now when I'll be able to choose my rep.
Oh, thanks.
Right, with my desires.
Now that you know I've shared a concert with Emmanuel, you're like, oh, maybe maybe there's something to this guy. No, that's great.
No, this is not true. When I was a student in Miami, you came to do a clinic with us. So. We met and...
Oh, is that right?
You, in many ways, yeah. Your name is definitely not my bio. Don't worry. I'm showing off by mentioning your name on my bio.
Oh, that's cool. Wow, well, thanks so much. That's really nice. Well, hey, Ben, no, great snag. It's good to do one just with you.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, cool. Okay, hey, well, Mitya, thank you so much, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Okay.
All right, bye, everybody.
See ya.